This organization came to be in concert with the development of the Independent Ethics Commission. It was a body initiated via Amendment 41, which is approved by the voters in 2006, despite well-financed efforts to oppose the legislation. I believe $1.2 million was spent. How would you characterize the role money plays in politics at the local level in that moment of time as it compares to the post-Citizens United world we know today?
Well, there's definitely much more political money at the local level in the post-Citizens United era. It's interesting. It's been a little bit different from what people expected since the holding of Citizens United is that corporations and labor unions can make independent expenditures as long as they don't coordinate with candidates. They can spend money directly to affect elections. People thought that the Exxons of the world would come in and fund these new creatures called super PACs that were created as a result of Citizens United. But really what we've seen is that wealthy individuals have set up corporations with innocuous-sounding names. They fund those corporations, and then those corporations are the ones that are spending money. So it's really been a lot of spending by wealthy individuals, but also, you know, definitely corporations are involved here in Colorado in funding super PACs. But it's definitely been the super PACs, which we've seen even at the local levels. For example, in Denver municipal elections, there were super PACs that focused on individual candidates. That's definitely a big change since Citizens United, and it isn't just at the federal level. It's all the way down to the local level in Colorado.
Are there changes that you would make to the way the commission is structured and formed, or do you see the model in use as adequate to the task?
First of all, I would change it so that it's not driven exclusively by outside complaints. With the way the Amendment 41 is written, the State Ethics Commission can't take action on its own. It has to wait for someone to file a complaint. I would definitely change that and allow them to investigate things on their own initiative. I would also get rid of this provision that they preserve complaints as confidential until they decide that they're not frivolous. And then if the complaint is determined to be frivolous, there's no judicial remedy for that. So the strong incentive is to sweep complaints under the rug that are valid by labeling them frivolous, and then they're kept confidential forever. So there's no opportunity to show the public how the Independent Ethics Commission got it wrong. I don't think that's what the amendment said, but that's what a 4-3 Colorado Supreme Court decision says it says. So I guess they get to have the final word on that. But if I were going to change things on Amendment 41, I would definitely change that.
Which organizations do you see as likely to fill the gap of your absence?
Well, with the State Ethics Commission, I think that's the one area where we've really been the premier watchdog group, and it's going to be really up to citizens to step up and watch that commission. People have made more use of the Ethics Commission of late than they did in its early years. This year, there have been over 40 complaints filed with the Ethics Commission that we know of. I mean, there's other ones that are being held as confidential because they haven't been determined to be frivolous or not yet, and Ethics Watch didn't file any of them. So the word has definitely gone out that the commission is open for business, and people are filing complaints, some of which are definitely not frivolous. So that's an area where hopefully citizens will continue to stay engaged with the commission after Ethics Watch is gone. What we've seen with the Ethics Commission is a variety of individuals coming before the commission. Typically, it's a local matter and local watchdogs filing complaints against someone locally, but there have been some complaints against state officials as well that are going forward without Ethics Watch's involvement. So that's the biggest gap. Some of the other work we do legislatively, I would say that Colorado Common Cause is really there to fill the void of the work that we've been doing in the legislature as far as good government, money in politics laws, and so forth. And the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition is really taking up the mantle as far as our work goes in transparency and open meetings and open records and so forth. But really, it's the State Ethics Commission that no one else is covering anywhere near as closely as Ethics Watch did. So that is going to be the biggest gap left after we're gone.
Talk about the role that media consolidation has had as it applies to a thoroughly and relevantly informed public, and whether the progression of technology has helped or hindered what narratives drive the frame of conversation.
Well, those are two questions, so I'll try to take them separately. First, as far as the media consolidation goes with traditional media, you know, I think we're just beginning to see the effects of that. We're seeing more and more consolidation of local television stations, and we haven't even seen yet what that's going to look like. I'm especially concerned about the Sinclair Broadcasting Company, which is known to have a pretty conservative editorial bent and not afraid to show it in their broadcasts, potentially taking over two of the TV stations in the Denver market. And just even without their particular political event, the tilt, the fact that there's fewer and fewer media companies that own local television stations definitely means that there's less diversity of points of view. I mean, and also part of it is the competition, which fortunately we do have between television stations, sometimes forces them to be more involved with following the Broncos, which gets ratings, than with following the nuances of local government, which isn't necessarily as television friendly. Now, as far as new media goes, you know, I used to be a big believer that new media was going to be an equalizing force and allow unheard voices to come to the forefront, but there's been an unintended consequence that we've seen in the last election where hostile forces can use it to whip up negative sentiments in the population and try to inflame and play on the hatreds that exist in American society in a very intentional way to manipulate people and push buttons. And so that kind of coordinated use of social media has really kind of negated some of the beneficial effects of opening the discourse to a wider variety of voices to get around that media consolidation by having more people being able to express their views on the internet.
According to the violations tracker at Good Jobs First, the 10 companies are Colorado-based that rank among the Fortune 500 have committed violations which collectively drew $1.8 billion in monetary penalties. Yet these firms continue obtaining governmental contracts. They get subsidies awarded by state and local officials. One particular case in point is DaVita Healthcare Partners. Their chairman has considered a third run as governor earlier this year, despite the corporation he chairs having to pay $800 million to settle charges that range from bribery to kickbacks to waste, fraud, and abuse. It seems the notion of proper conduct doesn't enter the realm of criteria. Do you see standards as such a thing more appropriately set by custodians of public governance, or should industry lead where that bar is located?
It's almost surprising that the number of fines is that high because moneyed interests have done such a good job in weakening our regulations in the first place that there has to be a pretty egregious violation to get fined. So I think that speaks to the egregiousness of some of these violations. But definitely the answer is that politicians have to raise a lot of money to get reelected, and they're also concerned about this so-called independent spending. So they're going to shape their decisions largely based on who's giving them money or who's going to spend money on their behalf, whether it's technically independent or not. So I think that definitely shows the influence of money in Colorado and federal politics.
Going forward, what do you see as the biggest issues that constituents in Colorado face?
Well, I think that the most promising angle for reform is in the realm of public financing. There was a ballot initiative in Denver that would have put in a public financing system for city elections, and it narrowly failed to make the ballot, but I think that the proponents are going to try again. I think at some point Denver, like Boulder already does, will have some form of public financing. Public financing of elections is positive reform that we're going to see more of in the future.
For KGNU, I'm Robin Ryan.